A couple quick notes before we get into the actual interview. First off, Koops did not have to agree to do this, but he did, so thanks to him. Without him, obviously, there would not be an interview of Koops on the website to cap off this Core Exile section. We cover quite a bit of different topics in this. First, we'll talk about where he came from, growing up, how that led him into programming and coding, how that led into Core Exiles, his general thoughts on accessibility in Core Exiles and other programs or games. Throughout all that is a whole bunch of specific Core Exiles game talk, and then the interview sums up with him talking about a couple new things that he plans on adding to the game in the near future. I hope you enjoy it. The runtime is just over an hour, but it does seem to listen really quick, so I'm going to quit talking and we'll get into the actual interview. So where did you grow up? Where'd you get started with all this? What was your early life like, and did it have anything to do with you getting into what you did now?
Well, I was born in Bath in the UK. Spent my childhood, though, in West Germany. I went to military boarding school. Spent all that time up until I was about 16 at military boarding school, and then eventually left. And after a few small jobs out in Germany, decided to come back to the UK. So I came back in about my 20s, and I've been back here since. But none of my earlier work in my life was anything to do with web development or anything like that. My sort of general employment led towards help desk, IT help desk, that type of environment. Hellish type of place to be, but it was fun while it lasted. So,
did you say you were at a military boarding school?
I did indeed, yeah. Windsor Boys School in Ham, BFPO 16.
Did you do something to get sent there, or was it like child of military?
No. My mother remarried, and she married a soldier. If you're in the army and you're abroad and you are married with children, then obviously I could have stayed in the UK with my grandmother and gone to school where I was at the time. But if I wanted to go with my parents, with my mother and my new father, I had to move to Germany. And in Germany, there's only a couple of actual schools, day schools. And there was one in Gütersloh. And you could go to day school at Windsor Boys School, but it was typically a boarding school.
I see.
So, my parents would go all around the country of Germany, various postings every 18 months or so. And I would spend my time at a boarding school. And when the holidays came up, I'd go to wherever it was they were living at the time.
So you weren't a troubled youth, just a
No, nothing like that.
That makes sense.
In actual fact, I think it was a great thing. It really did good for me. The old sort of sayings of it, I mean, it taught me to cook, sew, do my own ironing, do my own washing, you know, to look after yourself and be self-sufficient. I think, you know, many people these days could do with a dose of that. It was a bit difficult. I mean, I went there and I was about 10, so it was a bit of a change, obviously.
Well, yeah.
Shock. But no, once after the first year, I think I'd settled in, and it really was good for the character. So.
And then once you moved back to the UK, that's where you've been ever since?
I've been back in the UK since then, yeah, since my early 20s. I can't even remember what year it was I came back, but it was about 20-ish when I came back, 21, 22, something like that. Started working a bar at the time, just for something to do, and just been working ever since.
When was your first actual endeavor into any sort of programming or coding, whatever?
Well, we went down this path probably about 14 years ago. I spent the first 12 months after leaving, I was a help desk manager at the time, looking after three different help desks. And to be honest with you, the stress just got to me. It was just too much. And at the time, my wife was working very hard. I was working very hard. And, you know, life just didn't seem to be going anywhere other than earning money to pay the bills. So I decided to leave it and take a big plunge and went down to PC World. Bought a whole bunch of books and went home into my garage. My good friend Piers, who you might know as Prev, he helped me build a small office in the garage, and we started from there. First year and a bit, I was writing in .NET, or VB.NET as it was at the time, Visual Basic Studio.
Yeah.
But it became apparent that at that time it was very difficult to make a web-based, well, an application that you installed on your PC that then transmitted itself over the web to make it secure.
Right.
It was pointed out to me by numerous very clever people that you could actually hack it quite quickly and easily. So we sat down and we had a rethink, and we decided, okay, well, let's do it in PHP and SQL. So we went to PC World and we bought a whole new bunch of books and moved on from there. So about a year later, we came out with our first iteration of Core Exiles, or Shields Up as it was at the time, and we sort of never really looked back from there.
I had no idea you were completely self-taught through buying books.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, both
rather amazing.
Both myself and Piers. I mean, I'll give Piers his due. He's actually better than me by quite a chalk, but I've probably just got more staying power, more sitting in front of a screen for days and days and days. And you know, I mean, Core Exiles was my baby from the beginning, so you know, Piers has always been incredibly helpful and helped me in every step stage of the way to get me where I am. And I've just carried on as much as I can. So, but yeah, we both self-taught, so we've never been to a classroom or, and when we went to school, when I was at school, the web didn't even exist. So.
Kind of crazy. It's actually funny you mentioned Visual Basic because one of the biggest audio games for the blind out right now is called Swamp, and it's completely coded in VB6, which is...
In 6?
Yep. Wow. It's a little outdated, cool. But it's what the developer knows, and he's managed to make something out of it.
Hats off to him. Anybody that's carried on with that.
Multiple
still
games
managed to keep it running on a PC. Yep.
What was it that made you decide for programming? I mean, I'm sure there could have been any other options you could have chose where you went for programming. What was it that made you make that decision?
I've always been a lover of science fiction. To me, it was just a way of that step forward is instead of reading science fiction, is to create science fiction that somebody else can enjoy as well. And to do that, it was, well, how am I going to do that? When I first started, in fact, if I probably go back a bit more, my first foray into this was actually play by mail game. I've probably spent about 2 years running a play by mail game.
How did those work?
What was it called? Basically, back in those days, this was, again, before the web.
Yeah.
You wanted to play a game, and you played it via what we call snail mail.
Oh, boy. I thought that was what you were going to say.
Postal mail. Yeah. So you would apply to play the game. You'd send me your £10 or whatever it was, and I would send you back a hardbound manual. And that manual would be an outline story of maybe 20 pages of a kind of a plot. And then underneath that was all the rules and regs of how you played the game. And with it was a sheet. And you'd fill in the sheet, basically saying, my captain name is George, and George wants to leave the habitat today, take out the rover and go and look and investigate such and such. Now, he'd get that because I would send, along with that book, that week's...
Oh, wow.
If you want, chapters of the book. And the chapters of the book would say, you know, while they were out surveying the planet, they found this sort of underground building, if you like, for want of a better word. So, of course, I give them options. What they would do with that was up to them. They could write me back and say, no, I'm just going to ignore that and fill in the hole, you know. So that sort of thing. Or you can get others that would go, oh, yeah, we'll take out the rover and we'll go and investigate this. So it would be a backwards and forwards. And they would pay sort of, I forget what the time, it was something like £2.50 for every turn they took, every play they took. And I would sit and write, I don't know, four or five pages of stuff for each player. So we probably had about 50, 60 people playing it at one time. And we went to two of the shows in London, two of the play-by-mail game shows that were then. I don't think they exist anymore. And then the web came, and that all just died. So
a lot of the times nowadays, I feel like I'm getting too old to where I'm looking at younger people now and thinking, God, you guys have it so easy. But playing a game online is so easy compared to what you used to do.
yeah, there is that too, yeah.
I mean, you're literally sending the game out via the mail. For people to play each week.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, I mean, the postman used to turn up and he'd have a bag full of mail for me. And it'd be a case of opening them up and sitting down with a cup of tea and reading them. And that actually was a lot more, although it was a lot more work, it gave you a lot more flexibility. I mean, these days, if I want to make a change to CoreXiles or add something to CoreXiles, I have to sit down, I have to put it on a whiteboard, I have to chew through all the ideas, I have to look at the pros, look at the cons. Then I have to look at the coding and see, can it be squeezed in, such and such. With that, it was a case of, well, this guy, he doesn't want to dig out the underground bunker. He wants to strap a nuke to it and blow it up. Well, that's interesting. Okay, well, I need to sit down and think about an idea for that. And then I'd write 3 or 4 pages of, you know, how his nuclear bomb didn't quite go right because I want him to go in that bunker, you know, because my whole, you know, I'd obviously have a fair amount of cut and paste paragraphs I could use in some of the storylines and then just merge it in with their idea of what they wanted to do.
So, you were very...
It was good fun.
Strange combination of almost novelist and game developer at the time.
Yeah. Because your original question was, you know, what led me to this sort of genre? And that's, as I say, that my love of books, that previous experience of running that play-by-mail game. And the next step when the web came out was, well, we could put this on the web. You know, at that time, there were other various small games popping up all over the place. Some that are still around today, along with us. Most of them, 99% of them, are all gone now. They all died of the way. So the dyed-in-the-hard wool sort of freaks like me that are still here. but no, it was a way of moving forward that way. But to do that, I had to give up my job. And at the time, I was so stressed, I thought, do you know what? What's the worst that's going to happen?
That is way better of an answer than I thought I would have got for that. I mean, it is a direct correlation to what you were doing to just adapting with technology and then doing it in a different medium. It's really just stuck to it. That's rather amazing.
Thank you.
When it comes to actually playing games yourself, what is it that you enjoy playing?
My tastes have changed over the years. I suppose many people do. I used to play WoW a lot, but the problem with that sort of game is the amount of time it takes. World of Warcraft, the amount of time it takes. It just the sheer level of engrossment you can get into that is way and beyond what it should be spending in front of a computer playing games. Yeah, absolutely. And I played it from the early days. One of the games that we played that I still go back to and I love, but it is showing its age tremendously, is Anarchy Online.
I've never heard of that. You know,
not going to be one for your listeners, but Anarchy Online is it's a science fiction from the ground up morgue type game. But it is, I mean, it's been running longer than Core Exiles, let's put it that way, and it's still with us. So I love that sort of thing. The moment, like today, Factorio. I'm playing Factorio, which is a crafting, building, mine it, drill it, build it, technology tree type game. Because I like distraction. I like to take my mind away from what I've been thinking about something that we're going to talk about later, and my mind's mulling over in the background how the hell I'm going to do it, how I'm going to work it in, and this is a good distraction for me. It's either that or read a book.
One thing you said earlier that I thought was really nice is you said that one of the reasons behind something like Core Exiles is because you like reading science fiction and you wanted to give someone the ability to be in that world and actually play it themselves. And I've had a couple times where I went away from Core Exiles for a year or a few months. And one of the times I was reading The Expanse by James S.A. Corey. And reading that book made me want to play Core Exiles so bad. And that's what ended up making me come back and playing for another couple years more after that.
I should send him a check.
But yeah, you really do get that feeling. I know these types of games aren't for everyone because you have to be able to use your imagination. You're not getting all the sensory input that you would from a visual or even an audio game. But for those who do like it, it is perfect. It really does work.
Well, it does. I mean, Core Exiles is not just your average let's go and mine or let's go and kill something. It has so much to it, so much depth that over the years, I mean, I'm staggered sometimes, you know, someone will say something in chat to me and say, how do I do this? And I go, do you know what? It's been so long. I'm going to have to go and actually look it up because I haven't got a clue. Exactly. And I will literally have to go into the code and have a look and remind myself, oh, right. Okay. Oh yeah. That was that. Yes. Oh, they're still doing that, are they? All right. Okay. elements of the game that I'd forgotten I even wrote. So,
yeah. Yep. I mean, it is rather big. We will get into that later. I want to get more about the progression of Core Exiles and what it's turned into. But starting with your earlier game making, was Shields Up the first thing you ever did, or did you have any small projects before that?
No, Shields Up was it. So we went straight in. I went straight in, hardcore, in at the deep end, yeah. I created a couple of panels, I created a small database, and I let my mind go mad. And I mean, within a couple of weeks, I had the basic framework of a game and had a couple of people playing it. And then within a month, probably had 50 people playing it whilst I was avidly deploying it every day. You know, there'd be a new chunk here and a new chunk there every day. Some of our older players, like Bebeb, one of our staff, has been there since day one. He was instrumental in some of the early stuff.
What was the reason for that one going down originally? Because I know it eventually went down and then came back as Core Exiles.
Yeah, because Shields Up, unfortunately, at the time, there is actually, I don't know if it still exists, but there is an application called Shields Up, which is used for firewall control.
Oh.
That sort of thing. And that was actually called Shields Up. And when we launched, I mean, this was, 13, maybe 14 years ago. So the actual, you know, I mean, the web, it wasn't as structured as it is now. And there weren't as many search engines, there weren't as many browsers, and there were nowhere near as many games and programs. So we didn't actually go out and search to see if someone had chosen the word Shields Up. We just used it. And within about, I think about a year or so, we got a rather snotty email saying, you need to change the name of your game, we'll close it down. So we took the choice to close it down rather than be sued.
What happened in the downtime?
We moved to Wales, me and the wife, and I only had dial-up.
Oh,
so,
boy.
For a while, which is very frustrating, as you could possibly imagine in this day and age. So I thought, well, let's carry on. Let's re-scratch. And I basically took a chance to redo some of the elements, clear out the database, have a reshuffle of some of the thoughts and ideas. Not enough. but they had a shuffle of some of them, and then relaunched it as Core Exiles. Sent out a mail to the people that had been playing, and to my surprise, the vast majority of them came streaming in straight back in again. And that's also at the stage that we decided to add a store. We added a store at that stage, so to help it. Because at that stage, I was basically supporting the game. I'll be quite honest, at that stage, my wife was also helping support the game. The server costs in those days were quite horrific.
Yeah.
And it was always a balance between, are we going to make it? Can we find enough money to keep this server up? And we moved around a couple of times with server providers until we eventually ended up where we are now. And it's always Hobson's choice, really. You never really know until you try it. And it seems okay.
That's good.
We get away.
Wish Shield's up. Did you have any thought towards accessibility when that was out? Or was that not something you were aware of?
Well, Shield's Up was a port, if you like, from the VB game that I'd been working on. So, of course, when I designed the VB game, that had, especially in them days, that had absolutely no tags, no alt images, no nothing. I mean, that was... I wouldn't imagine that a visually impaired person would be able to play that at all from the way that I designed it, because it wasn't a structured program like a window that you tabbed around and you could press buttons. It was panels that hovered on your screen.
Oh,
there was a panel on the left, a panel on the right, a panel at the top, and a panel at the bottom. And they were actually modal, so they were on top of your browser, on top of your desktop. I don't think it would have interacted with that very well at all. So no, at that point, there was zero thought towards it, I'm afraid to say.
Were you even aware back then?
Not even aware. I mean, I'll be honest with you, when the first time that we located and found out we had people playing Core Exiles, both me and Piers kind of looked at each other and our jaws dropped onto the floor, and we were like, so these guys are blind and they're actually playing Core Exiles? It's like, hats off to them. How the hell are they doing that? So, I mean, it kind of answers that question itself, really, in that no. And when we ported it from Shields Up to the Shields Up web version, it was pretty much a sheer port of the ideas and philosophies of the game itself. And within that, we didn't know. Well, there was no forethought to, well, let's add some image tags and stuff here. In those days, it just wasn't really something that, you know, I mean, I've seen on the movies where people use Braille keyboards and stuff, but I never really even considered that people would be on the web and actually trawling through the web and playing games. I mean, that was probably the last thing on my mind. And it wasn't until we got exposure to that that people were doing that. And I thought, well, you know, okay, well, let's see what we can do.
It's quite sad that people still to this day are amazed and don't understand that a blind person can use a computer with technology. It's still unknown to a lot of people.
I mean, obviously, I've had way more exposure to that element or that side of it. And I'm very much aware now that, you know, blind people can do so much more than they used to be able to do. Technology has come on. We're not coming anywhere near as fast as it should really for people. But it has come on, and people can do now so much more. So, you know, and I'm always saying, you know, hats off to them, because I couldn't do it. You know, it would be one of my worst nightmares.
You'd be surprised.
To try and navigate Core Exiles.
It's actually, do stuff faster than someone with eyeballs on Core Exiles, which I find.
There you go.
With the last Koops challenge, that's how I got so many kills for the combat, because I can do combat so much quicker without using my eyes to do it. It's rather amazing.
Don't even have to wait for the browser to finish loading all the images and graphics and everything.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely.
I wanted to make sure on this. Core Exiles was originally accessible by accident? People were playing it and you didn't actually have that in mind to make it accessible?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, this is probably down to bad coding. We learned from a book, and at the time the book was published 13, 14 years ago, and at that time there were no alt tags, there was no image tags, there was none of that that really was. Let's put it this way. If it was listed in the book, it certainly wasn't listed as you must do this. It was probably listed at the bottom in the preface that said, you know, you can add these if you wish, but there was no reference to these would be used by blind people or visually impaired people. You know, there was none of that. So, because in those days, a bit like we were just saying, there was no awareness. Because we were using basic coding, you know, when we built a button or when we built an image or when we placed a link, because we were using a very basic format and not a Java script or, an Ajax type thing, then they would work by default. As long as you can tab to that button and press enter on it, then you can play the game. It's when we moved over to elements like icons in the toolbars and stuff that we had to go back and rethink, because at that stage, a lot of people would come to me and say, Coops, I can no longer access this bit. And I'd go, well, why not? And after about an hour, I'm blind. Ah, right, okay. So, and then we go back and add the alt and image tags and stuff and would make it, you know, it's not perfect. I add elements by default now. I mean, a lot of it's copy and paste, so I'll copy that bar from there, and that will already have the image tags and stuff in it that you guys need. So, you know, even today, it's not a case of making a, you know, I don't go through at the end of it and go, right, now let's go through and tag it for visually impaired people. Although, when we created the image bars, like the menu bars, if you like, for one of them, with all the images on them, there is actually separate bars for blind people now, or visually impaired people. So, as long as you go into your preferences and you set it flagged as I'm visually impaired, then those bars will be there instead of the, or they will provide the standard information instead of the more visual type information for the rest of us.
Okay, so I wanted to get into a little bit more specific Core Exiles talk, and I was wondering, because I talk to a lot of developers, and they all always have big issues because you learn so much as you're coding that what you made for you 10 years ago is, with your knowledge, is nowhere near what your knowledge is now, and you look back on it and wonder, God, what was I doing? So what are the biggest regrets you have with Core Exiles, what might have started back then, and it would be too hard to change now, but something you would like to change, or anything that you can say to expand on that? Because I know it's an ongoing theme with all developers.
The methodologies have come on a lot, the way that code works and the way that browsers work these days. And that is something that you have to live with. You know, you put your finger in the air and you make a step at a certain point and say, right, this is when I'm going to start coding. So this is what's around at the moment. You know, within 2 or 3 years, what you're learning and what you're coding is old school. And anybody who leaves university or such will come and say to you, well, that's old, isn't it? You're still doing that? Oh, we do this now. So we haven't moved on very well with Core Exiles. And primarily that is because there are probably close to 4,500 pages of code. Ooh. So if I was to make a change, I had a guy say to me in private PM the other day, he said, it's a really great game and I really love it, but when are you going to make it modern? You know, and I kind of wrote back to him and said, 4,500 pages of code, where would you like to start? You know, because you can't, everything's linked into everything. It's like a big ball of spaghetti these days. And, you know, just like I was saying earlier, if you want to make a change to Core Exiles now, it's not just a case of, oh, yeah, we'll just put that in there and that'll be fine. It's a case of, well, hang on, if you put that in there, that's going to affect that, that, and that. And then people collecting that over there are going to be affected. So it's a real minefield. But the biggest thing that I would have changed, and it would have helped us, I know people today would hate it, is storage. When we set out with Core Exiles, one of the things we sat down and we ummed and yard about over a cup of tea was, okay, so they're going to start collecting loot. How are we going to store it? So we've got two different ways of storing loot in Core Exiles. One is resources, which are based in stacks. So we have 10,000 units of copper or 5 units of copper, it's still one stack. But if you pick up a mining laser of Mark 1, that's a unique item, one of. So that's stored in the table as one item. If you pick up another mining laser Mark 1, that's another unique item. So that's two rows in the database. Oh. If you're someone like a certain player we shan't mention, who's got 50,000 items, then your table is 50,000 items long in the database. If you also have an alt that has another 25,000 and another alt that has 30,000, then suddenly we're rapidly approaching 100,000 items stored in the database just for you. What we should have done was we should have said, okay, resources, that's fine. They can have as many resources as they want. But when it comes to items, and this is something that we've done with our sister project, which is Project Terran, is we have said, right, you've got a limited storage. So, I don't know. And then each ship, because we've got lots of ships, each ship could have had its own storage space. So the bigger the ship, the more storage space. And that we could have allowed, you know, and expansions and stuff and expanders, we could have expanded on it. But I think we should have started with, you know, a reasonable limit, like 100 or 200 or something. We literally have players now that have over 500,000 items.
That is.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, I mean, and I only know that because I went through the database beginning of last week. I'm talking to some of the staff about it, but we have a certain player who has over 500,000 items in the database. And he'd been away for over 30 days, and we have what we call an automated prune.
Oh, God, yeah.
So after 30 days of inactivity, what it does is it takes those 500,000 items and it squirts them into another database, which is kept to one side, which isn't accessed by the game every day. And then when they come back, or should they come back, it will take those items and squirt them back into the game database, so it's back in your ship, which keeps the database fairly lean and clean, And of course, he came back shortly after that conversation. And half a million items transferred themselves back into the game. So, but it was born out of my belief that a person should be able to store stuff, should be able to collect things. You know, why should I be limited to, I can only have 100 of these or 10 of those? Or, you know, and it kind of makes it fun. But I looked at it as a kind of player stroke developer. So I never imagined somebody might actually start collecting. I mean, like, for instance, some of our DCF tokens and stuff. I mean, we've got players that have got maybe 8 or 9,000 oh, one type. My. Now, you're never going to use 8 or 9,000 no. one type, but they collect them. Now, I could have resolved it back in the beginning with a decision that we sat down over a cup of tea and said, shall we limit them to how much they can store? And we should have gone, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, a number of years back, I think it was 4 or 5 years back, I bought in the collection, not the collection point, the secure storage. And the secure storage is actually within the game. When you dock, you can take items from your ship store, which is that big, massive black hole, and shove them into the secure store. And then you can access them from any secure store you like. So it is a way of moving them out of your ship. And what that does is it means that when you go to your ship store and you open up one of those tabs, it doesn't have to look through your entire collection of stuff in amongst everybody else's entire collection of stuff. It only has to look for your small selection of stuff because you've very carefully and well done put all your stuff in a secure store. Does anybody use it? No.
I've been wondering why you were pushing it. For a long time, you were pushing it very hard. You kept making it easier and easier. I mean, now you don't even have to be docked, nothing. You can recall something no matter where you are.
Yeah, we've been trying our best to make people use it. But yeah, I think it's ingrained in a lot of our older players. And when I say older players, I mean, we've had people playing with us for 12, 13 years. So, you know, that's a lot of stuff to collect. I mean, if you imagine picking up 50, 60 items a day, probably minimum for some people. It's a lot of items. And it was something that we just didn't think about. We are lucky in a sense that we are on a server that can handle a gigantic database. It can handle a lot of requests. And it is, you know, it's top notch. So we are lucky in that respect. If we were still paying for expensive, poorly maintained old hardware, then we would really be struggling. And there was no way that this would be plausible on a desktop sort of VB type game anymore.
I think I will actually maybe move my stuff to the secure store now. I didn't know why it was there, and I thought it was silly. And what if I want that at some point?
I mean,
but now it actually makes sense.
It would be nice, perhaps, if someone comes back to me and says, the reason I don't use it, Coops, is because. Because as a developer, I never get that. I'll, for instance, when I put it out, here it is, here's a secure store, this is what it's there for, we've added this, this, and this functionality, you can access anything from anywhere, blah, blah, blah. All I got was that.
Yeah.
Just silence. You know, and a few people started using it. I mean,
I was one of them.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, it kind of has to be dealt with in some way or other. And in fact, I keep coming back to this. I was talking to the staff again last week about it, saying that, you know, I wonder what would happen if I suddenly turned around and said, you know, your ship has a limited capacity. You know, when you pick up loot, sorry, you can't pick up this loot because your ship's full. Please go to a secure store. You know, if I was to put that in hardcore, just bang, turn it on one day, I'm sure a lot of people would be really upset. But within a matter of days, they would see their especially like their miss tab, they would see those things opening 15 times faster because it doesn't have to sit there and go, retrieving deep storage. It would just open.
And you know, you actually made it easier on everyone to keep stuff in by adding a filter to the Mist store, so it doesn't load everything out.
Yeah.
So now the page doesn't really matter because it filters.
I got hate mail from that one as well.
Oh my god.
It doesn't matter what I do. People don't like it, or some people don't like it. I mean, it's just one of those things, and I come to respect that over the years, is that you know, people, everybody's different and everybody has different ideas. And yeah, some people did not like the idea of the Mist store only opening up to a certain filter. They wanted it to open up to their whole lot, you know, sort of thing. And that was fine because you've only got 500 items maybe, but for the guy that's got 500,000, you know, his page would take a minute and a half to load. And not our fault, and not technology's fault, it's just that you can't load that many items onto a screen in a browser without it becoming like porridge. We've passed our 10,000 items now in Corexar. So that's 10,000 actual physical, not resources, but, you know, like guns, weapons, shields. 10,000 we passed the other day. That's with the help of Bob's.
Bob?
Yeah, I don't know. You might have missed it. Must have been about 3-4 weeks ago. I was reading a series of science fiction books. Damned if I can remember the author's name, sadly. I did actually give him kudos in a post I made. And he was involved in an accident and died, but his brain was copied, scanned. And the book takes place over a series of centuries, where about 300 years later, he's revived, but inside a computer mainframe. And his name is Bob something or other. Basically, he's sent out as a Newman probe to go forth and prepare mankind to be able to, you know, colonize the space in front of us. And quickly finds out that we're not alone and that there are a lot of troubles with that. But one of the things they managed to do was to develop some very clever, what do we call it these days? 3D printers, that sort of thing. And basically he managed to 3D print himself. So he then became Bob, We Are Legion. So he became a legion of Bobs. And it's all about how he went forward. And by creating lots of Bobs to do other jobs for him, he didn't have to spend all his time concentrating on, you know, terraforming this planet or building some more spaceships. He could go, you, Bob, you look after that planet and you terraform that. You, Bob, you go over there and do that. So, so Bob was my thought. And whilst I was thinking about it, I thought, I spend months of my life sat in front of the computer with a pen and paper going, okay, well, let's build some new weapons and let's make one that's a little bit better than that and one that's a little bit worse than that. It's got better energy. And I thought, do you know what? If I sat down and I wrote an AI for Bob, I could get Bob to do it for me. So I wrote a Bob for weapons, a Bob for shields, a Bob for cargo, a Bob for energy, and so on and so forth. And they're all running on the server over there. And basically what they do is they look at current existing tech in the game. They take that out. They analyze it. They look at it. They look at what I've said that they can and can't do with it. And then they create a new one. And then they go off into ether and they pull out a name for it and go, we'll call this the Von Neumann blaster gun thing. And then they plonk it back into the database.
You wrote an AI on the server to make new stuff for you on the server?
I'll call it an AI. I think everybody else would just probably call it a script.
AI
but
way
I mean,
better.
But what is an AI? An AI is a script, yeah. I suppose. Basically, I created a bunch of scripts to go off and do my work for me. And I mean, they generated probably in close to 5,000 items in a period of a couple of weeks. So yeah, so using those that idea from that book was, you know, offloading your workload onto somebody else. And I always say to myself, you know, it'd be great if I had two of me, or maybe even three of me, then things could really move along much faster.
So do you get a lot of your ideas for new stuff from books and other media you're reading, and then you implement it into Core Exiles?
Yeah, mostly. I would say probably for the last couple of years, it's been from the odd game that we play, Piers and I, Prev. We go off and we try a new game for a couple of days and see if we like it or not. And most of the games we play are science fiction based. And those games that aren't, we look at the elements of how do they store things? How does loot get generated? How does this element of the game work? And we think, oh, you know, that's not a bad idea. We could twist and use that a bit. So, because I mean, pretty much all the games these days are, you know, a variant of some of the bigger, older ones. And they all use those systems. So they just, you know, rename them. You know, going back to Anarchy Online, you know, I mean, a lot of the things I see in modern games, Anarchy was doing probably 20 years ago, and they were doing it well.
So I know you said earlier accessibility has become almost second nature to you, but can you estimate how much extra time it might actually cost, or if it any more work that it might involve with Core Exiles, what it cost you?
It really depends if it's a new system or not. If we're adding, for instance, I won't put a date on it, but I'm working towards Starbases. Now, Starbases themselves will be very similar to the way settlements work, so I will be able to employ a lot of that code, which already has the visually impaired work done for it. If I was to add something new, a whole new chunk to the game, then I would have to think about, well, how am I going to lay that out? How am I going to design that? How's it going to look? How's it going to work? And then I'd have to think, okay, how much of that would work for the blind and how much wouldn't? So there is actually a strong element of it. It's not half the workload, but there is, I would probably say, a quarter of the workload there. And a lot of it's done up front in actual preparation and thought. Because once you start laying down the code, the last thing you want to do is go back and go, ah, we're going to have another element for this, because if somebody's visually impaired, then we need to display that in a different way. So it is work, but it's not overly problematic. And most of the time these days, it's because a lot of the work has already been done. So when I create a new chunk of code, a lot of the time it's cut and paste from other sections of the game already. And then I put it together and get my knit needle and just thread it all together until it gels. Back in the beginning, then there was a lot of work. Making new headers, creating new screens, literally are clones of the original screens for the other guys, but they're just different screens. So when a visually impaired player goes to a certain screen, they would get a different copy of that screen altogether. It may look similar because I know, sadly, and it annoys the hell out of me, and I really mean this, sadly there are a lot of our players who play with the visually impaired toggled on.
Yeah.
And that annoys me because, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, they've got every right to in the world, but I actually would, the more I thought about it, the more it annoys me because I could actually just turn off all the images for blind people because you guys don't need them, you know, in a global sense. I suppose it depends on your level of visual impairment, but if you are blind, then you definitely do not need those images. And all they're doing is slowing down the loading of that page. Yeah. So for a visually impaired blind person, then if they want to turn them off altogether, then not only does it save me bandwidth, it saves you a lot of bandwidth and time on your browser. But I can't do that because we have a number of people playing that are toggled that are not blind in any shape, sense, or form. They are just, they like the old screen.
Going off what you said, it's pretty much a steep curve at the beginning if you didn't have it in thought when you started to get it into accessibility. So do you think that's maybe a hurdle for a lot of people nowadays, why stuff isn't made accessible after the fact?
Well, I think the problem is that a lot of stuff that's developed these days I would not classify in any shape, sense, or form Core Exiles as being a modern game. It is a 1990s game, designed and looks like it. You know, I'm fairly proud of the fact that it's still going and still being, you know, of the kind of code type it is. But a lot of stuff that's developed these days is developed for the modern user. And when I say that, I mean all modern users, whether they're visually impaired or not. But modern code doesn't really lend itself to coding for the blind. You basically have to take a step back and say, right, well, we can't use Ajax and we can't use JavaScript on this page because it simply won't work for the blind. And a lot of developers are not going to be willing to do that. I mean, one of the things that surprised me an awful lot was Discord. You know, Screaming New is a great app. It's a great way of getting people talking together. And for us, it's worked absolutely fantastically. Great move from IRC. But I was gobsmacked to find that it does not work for the blind. The tags are there. They're just not used. They actually physically haven't put any coding into those tags, even though they're there. And you think, well, you know, you must have a team of coders. At least you could just pull one guy off to go back and put the tags in. And then it would make the program fully accessible. But no, they just decided not to. It does react differently in different browsers. And because Discord, like modern apps, is designed to work slightly different in different browsers. That's the browser's fault. That's not the developer's fault. IE will behave differently to Firefox, and Chrome will develop, you know, again, differently, and so on and so forth. And then you bring in all the modern web browsers, or the mobile browsers, which, you know, all those type of browsers are just a pain in the royal, you know what, because they just behave differently again, and differently in sometimes in a really weird sense. They won't do what they're meant to do. They're not compliant, so they're just coded to work on a phone, you know, a Samsung phone or an HTC phone or whatever. And I don't touch those at all anymore. And that's why these days, with Core Exiles code being so old, you know, if somebody says to me it won't work on my phone anymore, I just point them to a post that says we do not support phones, because it's just not worth the time. It's me. It's just me. You know, if it was me and five other guys, then fair enough. You know, someone could come fresh out of university with all the tech that we need, and we could say to them, right, make that work on a phone. But at the moment, they just look at me and go, ha ha.
Yeah, one thing with Discord, yeah. The blind community in general has been trying to give them a lot of feedback, and they've actually made steps with the app now, which is what most blind people use. Good. As far as I know. They've labeled a lot of buttons, but there's some focus issues and stuff like that, but they are at least making progress slowly towards making it work, which is good.
I'm glad in a sense because don't get me wrong, but the visually impaired people and the blind people that play our game are some of the most engrossing people I've played with. They're really fun to play
with.
And if they can come into chat and talk to us, that's fantastic. That's great. Because at the moment, they're limited to trying to post on the forums, or they just PM me all the time in game. Which is okay, don't get me wrong. But, you know, my day can take 2 or 3 hours in the morning,
yeah,
answering PMs. And not really what I need to be doing.
I don't mind
working with the community, but I should be coding.
That's hopefully what these guides will set up and hopefully help people
yeah.
be more proficient Excellent. On their own. We'll see, though. It's all based on their ability to absorb the information or actually look at the information.
Yeah.
I think
horse and water.
A big issue with Core Exiles is you start playing and the game's so massive, you just feel hopeless. Like, you're never going to be able to make a dent in
Lost.
Progressing because it's just so damn big.
If people read, which obviously visually impaired, blind, will do. I've gone back time and time again and edited and tweaked and cajoled the starter stuff to kind of try to explain that, you know, it doesn't really matter what you do. You can't really do too much wrong. And, you know, there are people to help you. And thanks to yourself. Now we're going to have some nice guides as well to starting the game. We did try and push that kind of feeling of you will feel lost. You know, anybody will feel lost in this game to start with. And it is, for 90% of our players, it's a throwback type game. They'll be looking at it going, well, this is a bit old, isn't it? And they don't expect much from it. And because they don't expect much from it, they suddenly find there are 50 options in front of them. And they go, hang on a minute, I thought it was just an old-fashioned browser game. Yeah, it is, but it's, you know, 13 years old. With content from the last 13 years. You know, I mean, there isn't a month that goes past that I don't do something with it. So some sort of add-on or change.
Now, getting out of accessibility for a little bit, I know Core Exiles has always had a balance between being able to play the game, not paying anything, and then obviously you have this very extensive store, which when I started was very small. It's become very big. It's almost as big as Core Exiles at this point, trying to find stuff. But how hard is it to try and find that balance between we need money to keep the game going, but we want people to be able to play and not be at a disadvantage because it's not pay to win?
Well, it really depends on the year. If you'd have asked me that question when we first started, I'd have said to you, not that important, although it'd be nice to make some money out of it. As the years have gone on, it's been a case of not that important, but it'd be nice for it to be able to pay its own way. To probably 5 years ago, it was a case of, now we're making a bit of money. That's great. Let's look at the balances and checks and stuff. At the moment, if you ask me right now, it's a struggle to pay for the servers each month. And that's not the player's fault. People have real lives to lead. You know, everybody has bills to pay. It's just that there is so much else out there at the moment. You know, when we first started, we were probably one of the only few spacey-type browser games that were not just 5 minutes worth of clicking and that was it for the day. You know, you could sit and play Core Exiles all day, every day, for as long as you liked. So the balance is difficult. It's always been difficult. We try to do our best, but we have to meet the bills.
Yeah, you know? Of course.
If it was just a case of paying for the servers, just the servers, then we'd probably manage reasonably well and we wouldn't have to worry too much and there'd be a little bit left over each month to go towards the next month. But the biggest bind in the world is advertising. Without advertising, in any kind of form, whether that be word of mouth, you know, friends, colleagues, whether that be Facebook, whether that be advertising banners on different websites, which is your last one, those all have a cost implication. And when we started, we were paying, in American, we were paying 2 cents, as in cents, a click. So for someone to come to visit our site would cost us 2 cents. We currently pay anywhere between $1.50 and $3.50. Yeah.
Wow.
So when somebody goes to the store and they spend $20 or £20, you can imagine that, yes, that's nice for us, but that really, all it's doing is keeping us going. I mean, I take my hats off to our players. We've got some real good core supporters. Probably 20, 30, 40 people who are core supporters that keep us afloat. And then we have the people that come in, they play the game, they like it, they spend a bit of money. They might go away for a year, they might come back, they might spend a bit more money, and so on and so forth over the period of a decade or so. The reason there's so much in the store is because, in all honesty, it's difficult to keep people supporting a game if there's nothing for them to buy. You know, if you've been playing the game for 10 years and you've bought everything that's in the store, the only thing you're going to buy now is something new or something for a friend or a colleague or a guild member. And we get a lot of that. We get a lot of players who recognise the fact that we need support and they'll be buying things for their guild members, which, you know, fantastic. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. But, you know, if I go and add, for instance, Starbases will be the next big thing. Now, we can't monetize Starbases too much because they are such a large add-on. And in a sense, I wanted Starbases to be something that players would have to really work at. And when I say really, I'm talking a billion credits, not a million credits, a billion with a B. That needs to be the kind of investment level they're looking at. And some of them have already spent well above that in investing in the frames for the Starbase and the hubs. But the next stage will be deploying those Starbases. Now, some of that we can monetize a little bit. And then the general day-to-day running of them, some of that we can monetize, but we won't. I won't go overboard with that because it's not something that I really want to do. So it is kind of a case of making sure that we've always got something in the store, you know, that somebody wants, whether they've been playing for 13 years or 13 days or 13 hours.
I did want to point out that you do a really good job of actually, yeah, there's stuff you can pay for, but there's also so many chances through playing for a year to get stuff for free that you would otherwise have to pay for. And that really seems to help offset it.
I'll be honest with you. I mean, over the years, we run the, what do we call it, the faction
oh,
rewards.
Yeah.
So as you level up to the last three faction levels of all the factions, I think it's about 20 odd factions. So each one of those, as you level into the last three, you can PM me and you can claim your dollar reward for gaining that faction. If you put them all together, I think it's about £1,600. Yeah. Pounds.
I was gonna say, it's a lot.
And we have got people who have done them all.
Oh, my.
And claim them all. So you can play Core Exiles completely for free and buy everything from the store completely for free if you play hard enough and you're willing to stay in the game long enough. So, you know, I mean, when I do from time to time get people saying to me, well, you know, you're charging this much money for this and this and this. And as you just said earlier, and I point out to them, well, you know, that particular item you're interested in is in the Festive store. So you can pay for that in Festive points. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, probably find that some developers wouldn't go quite as crazy as I do sometimes. You know, over a period of time, I go back to the Festive store and I think, you know, well, let's have these in there now. They don't sell very well in the store anyway, and let's make them an alternative that people can get in the game if they want to. Pretty much all the CES extractors and stuff like that, which we've got a 50% discount this month, but you know, you can get those in the game for Festive points, and that's just a case of playing. Yeah, just playing. And
oh yeah,
just
you
being
just get
there.
Them. I have to ask this. It's a little bit off topic, but. The Pimp My Ship. Why is it Pimp My Ship? Because it was so shocking to see you name something Pimp My Ship in Core Exiles.
I suppose perhaps it's an English euphemism more than an American one. Perhaps I'm free now. We should have thought you were calling
it more
carefully.
Pimp is like someone who runs,
it's,
you know, ladies of
the
night.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the UK we would tend to use that, you know, we pimp our ride. You know,
yeah, it was like that here as
ride,
well.
You know, so it was more in that element. I mean, and it was done with a storyline as well of Crazy Ivan and his family, you know, being repatronized and being looked after and being given the option to go legal. So they decided to use their skills. And because they are of that element, they are of the Russian mafia type element, that's the sort of thing that they would do. They pimp the ride, you know? So that's the sort of thing they would do.
Yep, that was always shocking
so
to me, though.
It just seemed to be to fit there. I mean, I mean, Core Exiles is predominantly for a family audience, and I would never go any further than that, but I figured that was probably about as far as I could go without getting in trouble.
I think you might have like
a bit of fun from time to time.
Couple swear words in the game, but very little. It's usually well placed.
Hopefully not. I must admit, in the first year, maybe 2 years, I learned very quickly that if I put something in that somebody doesn't like, I soon find out about it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yes. We have some very PC players.
yes. Unlike, what was it? Rex Shred. We all...
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
It's amazing how we've had players through the years that have actually changed almost the landscape of Core Exiles and added a new element to it. Like Rex Shred, for example, his personality was so overwhelming that he actually changed part of the game and how you can look at it. Because
absolutely, yeah. I mean, I added items to the game in his name, and you know, we had entire festive period around him. We've still got some festive items around him. So, yeah, I mean, it is. It is amazing how some people can affect a game like that. But his whole demeanour and way he comes across with the players was obvious that people really, really liked him, you know. So,
I mean, you're talking about the server costs and how much it does cost to run Core Exiles. And obviously there are hurdles that you have to overcome essentially every single month to keep the game going. So what do you see long term for Core Exiles? This is literally when I play a lot, this is something that I will sit here and think about. It's just, what if Coops disappeared tomorrow?
I suppose the first part of that would be that, I mean, for the last sort of 13 years, I have worked solely on Core Exiles, and then the last couple of years on Project Terran as well, without any other form of employment. So Core Exiles has been it. I get up, come down here, work in the office, go upstairs, eat my tea, go to bed. Last year, it became evident that we were struggling very hard to meet our financial commitments. So I took that chance to go and look for a job. And I currently work now for a company. I'm off at the moment with the hernia, and basically I'm waiting till next month for an operation to have my hernia fixed. But if you ignore that a little bit, then pretty much at the moment I am full-time employed as an employee with another company. So my time with Core Exiles is an hour in the morning before I go to work. So I'm up at 4 a.m. And an hour when I get back in the evening, and then at weekends, because my job's Monday to Friday. Prior to that, as I say, it was Core Exiles all the time. So that's why Core Exiles development has slowed down. It hasn't stopped, but it's slowed down tremendously. And I'm now dealing on a day-to-day basis with, you know, PMs from everybody, emails from everybody. When someone logs a bug, try and look at it the same day if I can, try and fix it within a couple of days if I can, if it's important, you know, if it's not too bad. I did that because I went to work because I needed to support Core Exiles. I needed to make sure that those servers were paid for and that we still had some advertising money left over at the end of each month to keep bringing new bums to the seats. So in a sense, as long as I'm alive, Core Exiles will always be there. The biggest problem, of course, is if I was to get run over by a bus tomorrow,
yeah,
is we have got Prev, Piers, and he is more than capable of looking after Core Exiles, but he doesn't spending his time day to day. So he's not in it day to day. So although he's, you know, at a developer level with Core Exiles and he's quite capable of looking after it on a day to day basis, it's not something that he currently does, but he could. But what's more likely to happen is that I will name somebody to become the new administrator, if you like, of the game. And somebody who wants to do that job, obviously. Some mad soul.
With Prev, you do have to realize he's not as friendly as you are. That's the best way to put it. He's not as good with the players.
He keeps his nail gun on the wall.
Yep.
I've known Piers for, 25 years now, and he has a dry sense of humor.
Yeah.
Which doesn't come across well in chat. Yeah. he's a nice guy, but he, you know, spade is a spade and a hammer's a hammer. He doesn't suffer fools very well, unfortunately. So, and you know, some of our players can be a little bit on the irritating side, shall we say. Some.
We used to have a saying that they're like Teflon because nothing sticks to them. They ask one question one day and the next day it's the same question.
I suppose, I mean, I've become less tolerant over the years with that element, but I'm still far more tolerant than others, so to speak. But I can only take so much. But So, I mean, longevity-wise, you know, I wouldn't worry too much. Unless I get run over by a bus, Core Exiles is going to be here. Development has slowed down, yes. Hopefully that'll pick back up again. And that is only down to income. It is really a task. It's a job of its own. I mean, I literally have to get up at 4 a.m. to spend an hour in here dealing with anything that might have come up the night before. You know, and that could be anything from a possible SQL issue to somebody hacked the game or somebody exploiting a piece of code or somebody just needs help and is completely stuck or, you know, that sort of thing. So I deal with that first thing in the morning, and then when I get back, I mean, I'll have a look at it during the day at lunchtime and just make sure there's no issues, and then come back in the evening and spend another 2 hours again doing the same thing. But it doesn't allow for that large expanse of 10 hours a day coding something new, which is why so much of it has slowed down.
As long as there is some sort of assurance that Core Exiles will stick around.
Absolutely. It certainly won't disappear from any kind of lack of interest, let's put it that way. I mean, it is, you know, I have probably, I probably shouldn't say this, but I have twice in the last 13, 14 years blown a fuse and walked away from the game for a number of weeks. And that's normally through players. Through rude, just unthinking players who will say something that is just unwarranted, and that'll be on top of a really bad day.
I think that's the case for a lot of developers.
So
I was talking to a pro, and the guy who developed Swamp, and when he made changes to make the game paid to stop cheating, he got death threats, people threatening to murder his family, just all kinds of stuff, and he had to step away for quite a while because he just couldn't take it all. He's just daily emails of people wanting to kill him because he made the game paid.
In that case, I'll stop complaining. Nobody's threatened to kill me yet.
I don't know if you're aware, but there's something called the audiogames.net forum, which is where it's like the hub for audio games. They have a database listing, and it's a forum for people to talk in.
Yep.
On there,
yeah, no, I have seen that, yeah.
I wouldn't go on there. It's very nasty. A lot of people are very rude. It decreases your quality of life if you spend too much time on the website because it's so bad.
Yeah.
Your forums are beautiful, civil, very well done. People behave. That's one thing about Core Exiles.
That is the thing with Core Exiles, yeah. The community.
It is best community I've ever been a part of, game-wise, ever. Just hands down.
I'd like to think of it as a work of love, really. It's something that, from the very get-go, because I was sat here all the time, not working, just working on Core Exiles, that I could spend all my time looking at what people were saying. I read every single post on the forums personally. I don't just gloss over everything. I read every single post. Obviously, I don't respond to them all, but I read them all. And it's making sure that you deal with an issue before it becomes a problem. You know, we've had our ups and our downs. We've had a couple of people pass away, and it wasn't dealt with perhaps in the way that some people would like to see it dealt with. You know, some people wanted banners and you know, memorials and sorts of stuff. And I'd kind of drew the line at that. I mean, I don't mind. We create an NPC for them, you know, and we'll memorialise the fact that they were with us for a long period of time and now they're gone. And we're sad about that. But you know, there are some things that we won't do. But as long as I keep on top of it, and as long as another big element to it is the staff. You know, I mean, we've got BB, we've got Sir Foxy, we've got some of our old ones, our old guys that have been there since day one. And these guys, they might not be, you know, you might not see them all the time, but they're there reading what people are saying. And they'll be on to me and say, you know, something's going on here, such and such has got upset with such and such. You know, and they'll step in and diffuse the situation. So it is, the community's great and they do self-police themselves a lot. But when they don't, we do it for them quietly. So, you know, but it does, you know, it's one of the things that we are known for when people, you know, somebody else is talking about Core Exiles and I see them say, yeah, great community, you know, they don't bite, they won't chew your head off if you ask a question. Yeah, there are no silly questions in Core Exiles.
It's almost self-filtering because you don't get a lot of the hot-headed, quick-to-anger types playing a game like Core Exiles. It's a much more mature crowd. Even the younger people are much more mature for their age, just by liking to play a game like Core Exiles.
Well, when you consider the period of time we've been running, we've only ever banned 3 people in the entire time that we've been running.
That's remarkable.
We've only ever banned, and when I mean banned, I mean kicked and deleted and locked their IPs out. We've put some temporary blocks on people because they get a bit carried away with themselves, and we have had the number of people trying to exploit the game, and I tend to take them to task personally. And when they find out that someone's figured out what they're doing, they're very apologetic and they stop. And they don't want to lose their game because they've been playing for 3 or 4 years and, you know, please don't delete me.
Exactly.
You know, whereas a lot of other developers would probably just lock, ban. And that's not how you keep a community. You know, that's not how it works. They're almost like family and friends, if you like, for want of a better word. And I tend to treat them that way. So,
Orkulos is a huge game, but it seems so much smaller because of the community and how you just know everyone who plays. I'm glad there isn't PvP in the game, because if there was, it would ruin that community, because there'd be so much animosity towards everyone else.
It's one of the things that both myself and Piers detest is PvP. Being on the other end, the receiving end of PvP, when you don't know what's going on, or you're new to it, or simply, you know, someone's just been playing it for 10 years and it's got so much more gear than you, or quicker reactions than you, perhaps. PvP is not something that I enjoy at all. So I've never really, well, I'll say that's not true. We did at one stage, and the code is still there. It's still actually online. It's just not accessible. And we did actually create what we called an offline PvP element. So basically you could choose to flag yourself for PvP, and your ship, you would then set certain flags for your PvP elements. So you tell your AI, you know, if I'm attacked, I want to do this. If he does this, I want to do that. If he wants to do this. So we set about 10 flags. And then basically you could go offline and then someone could choose to decide to attack your ship while you're offline. But we took it out. We looked at it, we coded it and we tested it a little bit. And then we thought, do you know what? Nah, let's just leave it out. That's why the game's got bounty in it.
Oh,
I often hear this from time to time. Someone will say, oh, I've just been told I've got bounty on me. What do I do? Should I be scared? And that is a throwback from that. It's just never been removed. So you can actually get bounty on yourself. That can be removed by destroying your ship, by getting yourself blown up. But that's where that came from.
Is there anything you'd like to share about? I know it's hard for developers because a lot of times it's everything's kept very close to the chest and it's top secret and it's released and everyone's excited and everyone rushes, and that's part of every game I've ever played. But do you have anything you're working on that people might not know about or know a little bit about that you'd want to share, let people in on a secret?
Well, there are
anything.
There are two elements. I'm probably a terrible developer because I always work on a number of things at once. You can probably tell that from the way that I publish stuff. I'll publish something about this, and then a week later I'll publish something completely different about something else. And you'll think, hang on a minute, I thought you were doing that. It's like, yeah, well, I did that for a bit, and now we're doing this. I'm working on a couple of elements. One is Starbases, which you'll know about.
Oh, yeah.
It's still coming, and we're still working on it, and still ironing out some of the problems that I know are going to happen. And I suppose because of the longevity of how long I've got to know the community, I know what they're going to do. You know, it's always a way of, if I code something to work this way, I can guarantee that five or six people will immediately try and bend it the other way to do what they want it to do. And it's making sure that, yes, they can do that, but it won't fracture what it is that we've added to the game or make it worse or exploitable. So Starbases is complex because it is an end of game type scenario. I mean, it is the last thing that people are going to work towards and own. But I did release and have been releasing the storyline of the AI.
Oh, yes.
They invaded our galaxy through the nebulas a couple of years ago now. And all right, that code's been slow to deploy. The initial bit was deployed, been slow to deploy and update. But that was primarily because then, obviously, I've had a year of being employed. So that doesn't help at all. But I have got, and I've been talking to the staff and we've been working through some ideas about what the next step is. The player base has been working towards the project that's currently open on the game for people to deposit stuff to, which is allowing the scientists to work on how to use the nebulas to travel through the nebula. Because the nebulas are being used by the AI to come through to us, but we're going to go back to them. So we are eventually going to be, I don't know which is going to come first, this or Starbases, possibly this. So because of the complexity of Starbases. But basically you're going to be able to build, and this is my term, this is not something that will probably end up in the game, I call them hedgehogs. You're going to be able to build, imagine a battle wagon for space, a spaceship that you'd classify as a battle wagon, a cruiser, a destroyer, and imagine it looking a bit like a hedgehog, because this thing is going to be sticking all sorts of stuff onto it. It's going to be like having a remote ship, which is the size of a small battle cruiser. You're going to be able to build this, and the deposits that you're making towards that project will enable you to build this, or be allowed to build it. So you'll build it, and then you'll launch it through the nebula, and it'll go back to Sol. It'll go back to Earth. And some of the storylines that we released, I don't know, 8 months or so ago, which were news of the AI coming through the nebula, the Crab Nebula near Earth, near Sol, basically starting to attack all the Earth-inhabited planets, all the human-inhabited planets, and working their way towards Earth. You're going to be able to go in and help. Now, timescale-wise, I'm not too sure. And a lot of that code I can grab from other parts of the game. So a lot of it, though, is more about how am I going to make it work? How am I going to integrate it? How am I going to allow everybody to be able to play it? Or do we only allow people from, say, level 50 to play it? You know, that sort of thing. It's those kind of questions that put fly in the ointment. But that's going to be the general thesis. You're going to be able to build your own, what I call a battle bus, a hedgehog, send it through the nebula. And the nice thing about it will be that it will be remote. So you'll be able to access it from any of the screens that we've got, the drag out panels. So if you can pull a panel out, you'll be able to access your battle bus, your hedgehog. And you'll be building bits and pieces to go on it, which will be, this is the thing with the bobs as well, that going back to that post about the bob thing, they'll have their own replicators on board. So you'll be able to have a blueprint for a new type of gun, and you'll say to your battle bus, gather the resources and build that gun and slap it on the front of that ship. Gather the resources, here's the blueprint. I've just managed to work out the blueprint for you. Send the blueprint through to the battle bus. I want you to put that shield on. So that's the sort of element there.
This really is coming full circle.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, I mean, that's the idea, is to bring us back to where we came from the core.
You're originally writing these play-by-mail games, and you're essentially just writing the next storyline for Core Exiles. It's released. We're going to be tying everything together.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Is that one of your favorite parts about Core Exiles, is writing the storyline? Do you still get the same enjoyment out of that as you did with your original games?
Probably not as much, because I have to be... I can't just create something out of thin air and have a kind of a throwaway type, you know, suggestion or throwaway thing. If I say anything in Core Exiles or make anything in Core Exiles, it's always questioned to the nth degree. Well, where did that come? What's that going to do? Who does that belong to? You know, can I build one? You know, can I own one? Can I buy one? Can I sell one? Can I blow it up? so I have to be slightly careful. But yes, I do enjoy that freedom of being able to create. And at the end of the day, you know, if I want to create a battle bus or a hedgehog, then who's going to stop me?
Exactly.
The truth of it will be whether anybody actually builds one and sends them through.
Oh, you know they will.
Because again, this sort of thing is an element of a push to try and make the level players, say 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, give them more core content, stuff that they can do. We added like the mining barges, Genesis, we've added all that sort of stuff that they can spend months and months engrossed in and playing. But this is something else for them to go. And their next, you know, I mean, the next foray into Core Exiles will be, ooh, let's go and build a hedgehog.
Well, I like that. I like that a lot. And that is all the questions I have.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Thank you for your time.